Such a killing can never be considered actual killing. Purport. The planet Earth is actually a woman in her constitutional form, and as such, she needs to be protected by the king. Prithu Maharaj argues, however, that if a citizen within the state, be he man, woman, or eunuch, is not compassionate upon his fellow men, he or she may be killed by the king, and such killing is never to be considered actual killing. As far as the field of spiritual activities is concerned, when a devotee is self-satisfied and does not preach the glories of Krishna, he is not considered a first-class devotee. A devotee who tries to preach, who has compassion upon innocent persons who have no knowledge of Krishna, is a superior devotee. In his prayer to the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj said that he was not personally interested in liberation from this material world, Rather, he did not wish to be liberated from this material condition until all fallen souls were delivered. Even in the material field, if a person is not interested in others' welfare, he should be considered to be condemned by the personality of Godhead, or his incarnation, like Prithu Maharaj. Translation again. Any cruel person, be he a man, woman, or impotent eunuch, who is only interested in his personal maintenance and has no compassion for other living entities, may be killed by the king. Such a killing can never be considered actual killing. Om Ganajananandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare. Why should Prithu Maharaj be angry? He is a Shaktivesh avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is particularly empowered with the ability to rule the earth. He is Prithu. The earth can be known as Prithvi. Prithu Maharaj is showing who is in charge. How is it that a king, albeit king of the whole world, can be more powerful than the earth planet herself? That is by the divine empowerment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Avesha avatars, part and parcel is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a particular mission. Perform activities far and beyond what ordinarily can be expected of the jiva. The four Kumaras were empowered with Jnana Shakti, a knowledge empowerment. Narada Muni is famous for his Bhakti Shakti empowerment. So similar, you see Prithu Maharaj demonstrating the empowerment of world government to such an extent that even the earth planet herself has to submit. The underlying theme is compassion. This is what Prithu's anger is based on. His anger is not based on frustrated material desires. At our retreat this weekend, I was explaining the business cycle, as Krishna puts it forth in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Indeed, Krishna knows the business cycle. First, you contemplate the objects of the senses. That is, you contemplate your potential acquisitions, your potential achievements. And then you begin to become attached, meaning you identify with that product, you identify with that achievement, that acquisition. This is me. Every marketer dreams that the consumers will identify with the product. If you have achieved that goal, then your marketing campaign has reached the supreme destination. Once you identify with the product, meaning you're attached, then, as Bhagavad Gita explains, lust develops. But lust today has no negative connotation. As I often explain, according to today's standard, people will compliment you. Oh, you have such a lust for life. You're so alive with desire. That's what it takes to get ahead. High self-esteem means a burning flame of desire. Low self-esteem means you're just not hankering enough. You're just not longing and lusting enough. So, ordinarily, people's analysis of the business cycle stops there. Just lust for lust for lust. For desire, for desire, for desire. And that's what life is all about. They forget the rest of the cycle. The actual result of the business cycle, business as usual, is frustration becoming anger. So Krishna explains all this. But it's very difficult for people under a barrage of such materialistic propaganda. It's very difficult for them to see the whole actual cycle. They're just seeing a very vitiated or artificial version of the full business cycle. Contemplating the product, identifying with it through attachment, and then hankering, desire, wanting, and that's it. We have an advanced society. And the more economic affairs are there, the more advanced your civilization is. In other words, we have an inbuilt contradiction, an inbuilt problem. A consumer society cannot continue unless the people's desires increase. They have to be in a state of perpetual dissatisfaction. Otherwise, they won't want to buy your latest product. Not only do you have to fill your house with so many items, but then, once your house is full of so many items, you have to have the latest items. So unless you feel dissatisfied, number one, I have to have these things, there won't be any progress. Number two, when you have those things, you still have to be dissatisfied in order to acquire more and more. So you say, well, that's fine. That's the way life is. You can get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. No, what you're seeing throughout the world today is frustration and anger. We were promised so much by globalization. We were promised so much by automation. We were promised so much by covering the world with that kind of so-called civilization. And now we find that we have not gotten what we want. We want our material desires fulfilled. Who is getting in the way? Why doesn't the government help us get what we want? It must be others, the immigrants, they're getting in the way. People with a different body. They are ruining our life. Anger. Plain and simple, based on frustrated material desires. I often give the example of Germany, a place I lived at one point. It is said that for so long, the German people were ashamed to identify as Germans because of World War I, World War II, and the role the country played. They rather consider themselves Europeans. That was safer. It means if they considered themselves Europeans, they wouldn't harass the rest of Europe. And it also was more sophisticated than what was considered to be very injurious, harmful nationalism, especially from that particular country. So they downplayed their national identity. They downplayed their bodily identification. But without knowledge of anything higher, sooner or later, you fall victim to the same old story. So many persons there say, what's happened for so long? We've missed out on having the strength and solidity of body identification in terms of nationality. Other nations have it. They have that vital consistency of I am from this country. This is the land of my birth. We miss that. And then, if there's some confusion, turmoil, economic problems, what is the solution? There are too many persons of other identities in the country. And what about us? We have neglected to nourish our upadis. We've neglected to nourish our body identifications. That's the problem. We need a revival. And I am the body of this particular nation. That will be the solution. Then we'll be great again. This all springs from frustration. But frustration and anger must be there because of body identification. But who gets that? You just think, as I often explain, over here is material desire. Over here is anger. The two are just completely distinct poles. One has nothing to do with the other. Desire is of its own essence, its own thing. Anger is of its own thing, its own essence. Who can see the correlation? When Krishna explains the business cycle in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he's teaching you. It's all one package. And that's a little difficult for us to understand due to our conditioning. Living in an atmosphere saturated with material desire, we think that material desire has some innocence to it. And we console ourselves in that way. I'm just wanting what everyone else wants. In fact, I'm wanting a little less than everyone else wants. I'm not the greatest materialist or the worst materialist. I just want my due share. That's all. And everyone has in their mind what their due share of material happiness and fulfillment is. And you think you're justified. It's all I want. So we grant ourselves a sense of innocence. And this assumed innocence can make reading Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the Bhaktivedanta purports, a little tough. Because the Bhaktivedanta purports strip away our innocence, our cloak of false innocence. It's stripped away. And we start to be able to see outcomes. Material desire must lead to frustration and anger because the soul can never be satisfied in that way. Prithu Maharaj's anger is of a different sort. He's demonstrating the perfect use of anger in devotional service. What is happening? The earth is not providing sufficient food, even though all the yajnas have been performed. Everyone's doing their prescribed duties, but the earth refuses to reciprocate. People are starving. I must do something about it. He's angry because the earth is not properly behaving according to her duty. So, Prithu, being the ruler of the earth, was going to make a correction. His anger was not composed of the modes of material nature. That's a difficult thing sometimes to understand. Even in Chaitanya Leela, when Nityananda kicked Sivananda Singh, Sivananda Singh's son had a tough time processing that and went off to Puri, separate from everyone else. and Mahaprabhu noticed upon the entrance of Shivananda Sen's son, noticed, "You're a bit disturbed by something. Take off your coat, please." I often tell the story that I encountered in Japan. The year 2000. Some very nice, elderly gentleman from India approached me respectfully and said, "Swami, can you please explain something that has bewildered us for 30 years? 30 years ago, your Gurudev, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, was in Japan, and we were having a Hindu gathering, and we invited your people. At that time, there were only a handful in Japan. And we heard that your Srila Prabhupada was in Japan, so we invited him as a key speaker. And naturally, we had other speakers there. But what happened after? We still can't process after 30 years. What happened was that one of the speakers was a raging Mayavadi who was speaking at full Mayavadi potential. And yeah, he was a Swami, he's wearing saffron. The audience is listening respectfully. But devotees who were there told me, as the Mayavadi sannyasi delivered his poison, Srila Prabhupada was getting restless. Just sitting there. And the speaker went on and on with his concoctions. Finally, while the speaker was on stage speaking, and the devotees and Prabhupada were in the audience, Prabhupada turned to the devotees and said, "Go up on the stage, make kirtan." Of course, they happily did that, you know. "Try, Prabhupada." "We'll take care of business here." And they did. They jumped up on the stage, right? Well, the very nice Hindu gentleman, Mayavadi sannyasi, was speaking. All of a sudden, there's, you know, whompers and cartels. And so the audience was astonished. Still, they didn't say anything. But their faces showed the look of astonishment. So that was that. 30 years later, these gentlemen were still bewildered. "Your Swami, we have no doubt he's a sadhu. Why did he respond in such a way? He should be full of equanimity. Of course, we know he has equanimity, but he should demonstrate that." Why did he apparently lose his temper and respond in such a very impolite way? So yes, the anger of the sadhu, a real sadhu, a real devotee, can be misunderstood. Similarly, you could consider Pindu Maharaj. He's angry at the earth. The earth has a tough time understanding this. Prithivi, she's wondering, "Wait a minute, I've got some good reasons not to be pursued by the king. Number one, I'm a woman. Number two, I'm in the form of a cow. Got everything covered here. Number three, I'm innocent. And number four, I've surrendered. So for all these reasons, the king should not be angry at me. Prithu should leave me alone." But you see, Prithu has his reasons. "You're not doing your duty. You've received yajnas. You have not reciprocated. Furthermore, you're cruel. You have no compassion for the suffering of the living entities on the earth planet. So if even the earth herself, the demigoddess has trouble understanding the anger of such an extraordinary personality as Bhrigu, what to speak of us? We require a deep understanding of the role of all the emotions in devotional service. And indeed, bhakti gives that kind of knowledge. Narottam Das Thakur says that even madness can be used in Krishna's service. You'll see in tomorrow's verse that preacher's going to tell her, you're very much puffed up with pride and have become almost insane. Preacher's being mad or angry is for Krishna's service 100%. And Narottam Das Thakur says that you can dovetail madness by madly chanting Krishna's glories, oblivious to the world. Of course, when we do Harinam, we are doing a public event. But in the temple, you can chant with abandon. Madly. Madly means irrespective of social convention. Just stay on the right side of the temple. Well, you can chant and dance to your heart's delight. Who will stop you? You don't have to worry about people from outside suddenly bursting through the doors. What are you doing? Stop this ecstatic dancing. You don't have to worry about that. Children can dance. Adults can dance. And you can dance madly for the pleasure of the deities. Our bhakti program is a full portfolio for handling all aspects of the human experience. And often we are afraid of advancing in spiritual life or trying to advance because we think, I'll feel emotionally deficient. I'll be neglecting parts of myself. This is very much stated in the Western world, perhaps kind of unstated in other parts of the world. But in the West, you're supposed to project your emotions like carrying a flag. This is me. I am me. Friday, I was listening to His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj explain about rights and duties and how the duties must accompany rights. So I was telling him right before class, in the West, we have duties. Everyone has a duty for their sense gratification. We have rights. Everyone has a right to sense gratification. All else comes after that. And as I was explaining at our retreat this weekend to our very wonderful group of Indian students studying in Australia and young professionals, I was explaining that when you're a hybrid, when you have a foot in both worlds, please admit that there seems to be something attractive in these Western ways of no traditional duties, no traditional obligations, just what is it you want right at the moment. It looks kind of attractive. You're free of all concerns. What does my grandmother in Gujarat think? You don't have to worry. You can just be what you want to be. It looks kind of attractive. When I say that, of course, no one will out loud agree, but I watch them and they... Yeah. There's something, there's a mystique about it, isn't it? Just walk down the street and do what you like. With no fear of repercussions. It's your life, it's your sense gratification. However you want, wherever you want it. It looks kind of exhilarating. You're free from all the shackles of tradition. Family, who cares what your family thinks? What family? Religion? What is that? It looks sort of attractive. But then the rationalization is that, yes, we should be a little like that, but not go so far. When I was speaking at our ISKCON temple in Chaupati, I called this Kama Bindu and Kama Sindhu. One way is Kama Bindu. A drop of material gratification. Not too much, but the drops must be there. And then the Western approach, Kama Sindhu. Just dive into the ocean. The deeper in the ocean you go, the better. So I explained this weekend about the Kama Bindu approach. You want to head in the same direction, but not take it to an extreme like the locals do here. So I explained that unless you have a deeper understanding, you won't be able to resist the inevitable pull of the modes of material nature. Because the way the modes of material nature work is that they play tricks with your mind. Material existence, as you read in the Bhagavatam, is lived in the mind. So material nature beckons to you. Perhaps you've heard me explain this, the submarine concept. You know what a submarine does? It can stay on the top of the water and then descend to a measured level and hold there, to a measured depth. So we have that notion of the illusory energy that, okay, I'll just go into Maya to this level under and I'll hold right there. You know, submarine has a technology to do that. So we're like that. I just go down to this level. I'm not going to be like the locals hitting rock bottom. No way. Then they won't be able to get you. I won't be able to get a job. I won't. No, I want to be a respectable gratifier. Going to Janmashtami once a year to the temple, you know. Leave it at that. So then, this submarine theory, does it actually work? What happens? The illusory energy says, come on down. Come down. 10 meters. Hold right there. Don't worry. I promise you, you will not become degraded. You go down 10 meters. And then what happens? Well, now that you're down 10 meters, how about another 50 meters? Okay, another 50 meters. So that's 50 plus 10. I'll hold at 60. And Maya promises you, I vow I will not harass you anymore. Down to 60 meters, that'll be it, you'll be fine. And in fact, you'll have the best of both worlds. You'll be religious and you'll be happy too. Come on down. And this process goes on and on. You go lower and lower. And then suddenly, before you know it, where are you? Rock bottom. And then you inquire, how did that happen? I trusted. As the Bhagavatam explains, the material energy has two departments, the throwing department and the covering department. I will not harass you anymore. You're thrown into the depths of illusion and covered over so you actually can't figure out how did this begin and how am I going to get out? So whether in this day and age it approaches Kama Bindu or Kama Sindhu, both are dangerous in this day and age. Friday you heard Maharaj explain the whole scheme of a real civilization, which elevates persons from one level to another.
That's not existing.
Many of you are carrying the remnants of that glorious kind of civilization, but the actual civilization itself is not existing. An actual civilization allows for immediate spiritual progress and gradual development of spiritual. It's not there. Our saving grace is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Hare Krishna. Sanatana Goswami was hearing from Mahaprabhu about the various avatars. Guna avatars, Purusha avatars, Leela avatars. And then Mahaprabhu began to explain to him about the Yuga avatars, the incarnations for a particular age. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that Sanatana Goswami is extremely intelligent, actually as intelligent as Brihaspati, the priest of the heavenly planets. You don't know how intelligent that is. So Sanatana Goswami wanted to reveal Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of God. But he knew he had to do this very delicately and tactfully, because Mahaprabhu would never admit himself. But Sanatana Goswami wanted Lord Chaitanya's glories to be known. So after Mahaprabhu explained about the Yuga avatars, Sanatana Goswami very cleverly said, "Can you please tell me how the Yuga avatar, particularly for this age of Kali, is recognized?" "I am very low class. I'm very badly behaved. My background is atrocious. I need to know how we can recognize the avatar for this day and age." So Lord Chaitanya proceeded to explain that you recognize, he explained in general, you recognize an avatar, a Yuga avatar, by the Shastra, not by your own speculation. Mahaprabhu explained that a genuine incarnation of God never says he's God, but by his extraordinary activities, by his essence and his external characteristics, you can see this is an incarnation of God. Mahaprabhu presents the standard of Supalakshana, the major characteristics, and the Tatastalakshana, the external characteristics in terms of activities performed. So after giving that education that you recognize an avatar not with your ordinary perception, but through the Shastra, that reminds you of a point I was speaking about somewhere else. A surprising point made in one Bhagavatam purport, that more important than seeing Krishna with your eyes is hearing about Krishna through legitimate sources. That's a little difficult to understand, isn't it? If I would see with my eyes, I would know. But reading the Shastra, that's just reading. We need to think about this. What's before our eyes can bewilder us. We may not even understand what's before our eyes. Therefore, the stress is on educating yourself so that you can understand what you see. So Mahaprabhu explained in answer to Sanatana Goswami's question. You recognize an avatar, not only a yuga avatar, but avatar in general, by characteristics stated in the shastra. So Lord Chaitanya finishes his explanation, and then Sanatana Goswami, who has the power to ask such questions without hesitation because of his bhakti, you could say he was prying. He was being a bit investigative. But because of his bhakti, without hesitation, he could do that. He was acting 100% for the benefit of others. So after Mahaprabhu explained how you recognize an avatar, especially a yuga avatar, Sanatana Goswami said, isn't it so that the avatar for the yuga, for Kali Yuga, is golden and always chants Hare Krishna? Isn't that so? Lord Chaitanya immediately responded, please, you give up your clever tricks. Let me now explain about Shaktivesh avatars. It changed. But by his silence in not refuting, he's giving his assent. But Mahaprabhu is intent on imparting shastric knowledge. And also, although he's Krishna, he's in the role of Krishna's devotee. That is his mission, to taste the position of being Krishna's devotee. Therefore, he doesn't respond when others call him the Supreme Personality God. But Sanatana Goswami, with his cleverness, tried to arrange the situation. But Lord Chaitanya, of course, was on to it. You're not going to catch me. You're very intelligent, but let's now talk about Shaktivesh avatars. Just change the subject. You might think that Prithu Maharaj must be an exaggeration. How can a person be this powerful? He will chase the earth personified throughout the universe as she tries to escape. How can anyone be that powerful? Our intelligence is so cramped by Kali Yuga that it's very difficult for us to accept persons with such powers. But just think of things from the other direction. To the great sages of Naimasaranya, who listened to Sukta Goswami, to the audience that gathered to hear Shukadeva Goswami speak to Prithu Maharaj. For them, when they hear about the way human beings are today, so low, so weak, so unintelligent, it would sound like mythology. How can people be so crazy? How can people be so low? So what is mythology for one person is reality for another person. You think, oh, a person like Prithu Maharaj must be fantasy. But then, someone of the standard of Prithu Maharaj, the four Kumaras, Sutta Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami, they look at the way we live today, taking economic affairs to be the all-in-all. If I just make some money for a few years, my life is successful. It seems mythological to have human beings, a version of human beings, calling themselves civilized, that destroy their own habitat. For now and for future generations. Who can believe that? Just like I was discussing with Anirudha Prabhu yesterday, how a few days ago you had a demonstration in Melbourne, a rally by 14-year-olds who were protesting the failure of the government to act for climate change. Yeah. Young teenagers. But they know. We have to grow up in this kind of world that you're destroying. So they were protesting. Australia's current refusal to curb the mining of coal and refusing to curb the addiction to fossil fuels. The young kids protesting. So the political leaders in charge responded, as you would expect. What are you kids doing? You should be in school. You shouldn't be worrying about this stuff. You should be learning your lessons. In other words, education has nothing to do with reality. Leave the reality to the politicians. We'll continue to exploit and destroy the environment. You just do your studies. Well, what are you studying? This is a tragedy. And what did your resources minister of Australia say? You know, the resource minister, he's in charge. I never explained to him. He's in charge of all the mining and all the fossil fuel productions. He said, about the young persons, 14-year-olds demonstrating, thousands of them, they should be in school studying geology and learning how to extract oil and coal from the earth. To an intelligent person, this is mythology. But yet when we hear about Prithu, oh no, I don't know, that can't be true. The Bhagavatam gets a bit carried away sometimes. Indeed, early in the 20th century, when did Arya Samaj begin? Late 19th century or early 20th century? Yes, yes. Jnananda Saraswati. Yes. They thought that we have to bring the Hindus together so we get rid of the British in a nice way. So in order to create unity amongst the Hindus, we need to focus on a Shastra that's not as fantastic as Srimad Bhagavatam. We need to focus on Vedic knowledge that's more generic, more undefined. Bhagavatam is just too colorful, it's just too extrasensory. And so that contamination can carry on through today. To submit your intelligence to Srimad Bhagavatam means your life will be transformed. Your intelligence will be transformed. And that is so desperately needed. That transformation is so desperately needed today. Prithu Maharaj is ready to take action. He's calling the earth cruel because you have no compassion for other living entities. We see that throughout the world today. People don't get the basics. But they're being sold nationalism. You may not have money, but you have the feeling that you're better than another group. That's all you need to get by. This is happening all over the world. It's a very convenient way to be exploited. Why are you worried about your wage? In the USA, this is called the hidden wage. We don't increase your wages, but we increase your hate of another group. Be happy with that. It's the hidden salary. Very clear. If you were a materialist, you would do the same thing. You would see, people are dumb. Give them lots of sports. Give them lots of social media. And we take all the money. But what do we give you? Hate for other groups. That's the problem, the other group. They are ruining your future. So these are not real leaders who are doing this. But who has the ability to give knowledge about what is beyond the bodily identification concept of life? No one is doing that. Whether they're benign leaders who are thinking, let's help the people somehow, or leaders who just don't even care. Neither have the knowledge. Therefore, this mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is most important. It is based on real compassion. We all have this mission in our hands. If we play a dynamic role in it according to our capacity and family situation, we'll get credit from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu. It's a time when, as Srila Prabhupada explained, even a so-called ordinary devotee can attract the attention of Lord Chaitanya by taking up an active role in this mission. Prabhupada gave the example of just like during a war, ordinary boys are drafted into the military. They might come from the farms, from rural areas, but they join the military because they have to or by choice, and they have a chance to become a hero and be recognized, even though they're from such ordinary rural backgrounds. Similarly, we have this great opportunity. So let's allow Prithu Maharaj to stir us up as you hear about this section of Bhagavatam. He's showing real compassion. His anger is real compassion, and he's taking action. All right, any questions? Yes?
You mentioned about how even an ordinary devotee can attract the attention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by sincerely trying to serve. My question is, how do we know when we are giving our best to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
You will become peaceful by always making plans how to give Krishna to others. That is the real peace. Krishna Bhakti Nishkam Adhaya Vashanta Bhakti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Vashanta. What even the other legitimate Vedic past can't give, the Krishna Bhakta, especially in this day and age, the one who takes shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he or she can get peace simply by always thinking how to give Krishna to others. That is samadhi. So absorb yourself in that samadhi, and you'll attract the attention of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes?
My question is, we mentioned a lot about compassion, so I think Sankirtan is really an act of compassion. So my question is, how can we measure the success of Sankirtan?
Your success is if Krishna is pleased. That may happen when you distribute thousands of books or only one book. It's not a mechanistic process. Krishna knows how hard you're trying. Even someone who apparently is not doing much can please Krishna because they're giving their all in all. Yes, it's the Prabhupada marathon. We want to see lots of books distributed. No doubt about that. At the same time, we understand that someone can be doing their best and just distribute a few books. Yet, Krishna is pleased by that. Someone may not have the best technique, They may not know what to say, but they go out with a full desire to please their spiritual master in Krishna. I know one of my godbrothers became a devotee like this. He was a university student, and he was walking in his university town. He encountered a devotee who was out on Sankirtan distributing books. And the devotee had zero technique at all. He was just, everyone is supposed to go out and distribute books, okay. It was not his daily service. He was a weekend warrior, as we call them now. But still, he took his book bag and had some Bhagavad Gita's, and he didn't know any polished technique, any special mantras. So his technique was just to walk up to persons and say, he would open the Bhagavad Gita and say, Sarva Dharmam Prachaja, Mame Kam Charanamrita. Now immediately you would say, not a very effective technique. Obviously he wasn't selling many books, but this is the only way he could function. He was trying his best according to his capacity and his knowledge. So, person after person he'd approach like that. No results that day. Then he approached this young university student. Sarvadam and Vrichaja, Mame Kamasharam Vaja. Where's the person he's talking to? The student had collapsed on the ground. Stunned. The student got himself up off the ground, read the verse in purport, bought the book, ran 2 miles back to his dormitory, and read the Bhagavad Gita. So there's an example of how Krishna is using a devotee. Especially in New Zealand, because the population is small, 4.5 million persons, devotees have to be very conscientious about their personal interactions, because they're going to see the people, the same people again and again. I think it's Tasmania. You're going to Tasmania? It'll be like that. Remember, what I always point out, treat the people like you're going to see them again, because you are. So I know so many devotees in New Zealand who went out for 2 hours thinking, and they were thinking, what's the use of this? It's just 2 hours. I could be doing so many other things, but they tell me I should do this. It's the bliss of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Yeah, Kijai, all right. They go out for 2 hours, they don't do practically anything. And right before they're about to return and stop their distribution, someone takes one book from them. And I've heard so many examples where later it turns out that one person who got a book became a devotee. You don't know how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to use the situation. How he's going to use you. We just want to make ourselves available. And we beg for their mercy. Mercy of the Panchatattva. Remember that the more the Panchatattva dance, the more the flood of love of Krishna increases. We want to be part of that dance. Anything else? This side? No? Yes.
Thank you, Mark. Maharaj, my question is in regards to the use of violence on the grounds of compassion. You know, in this...
British Kshatriya, he's a king. He is the legitimate dispenser of violence. That's part of the duty of a genuine king, to use violence properly with discrimination. He's not a brahmana. But even the brahmanas killed his father with high-sounding words. Mantra, sound vibration. That was legitimate use of Brahmana power. Rare example. But Prithu, it's part of his everyday life to use violence or threaten use of violence to keep law and order in his territory. Bhagavad Gita is not a non-violent book. Sometimes this point is a little difficult to understand. Sometimes when Prabhupada would be speaking on Bhagavad Gita, I remember, it's not in the Lilamrita, but in Hayagriva Prabhu's recollections, you'll find it. The first time Prabhupada spoke at Stanford University in the USA, the whole room was packed, 300 students, and they had a rip-roaring kirtan, as Maharaj would call it, an uproarious, generally uproarious kirtan. 300 students chanting and dancing. Prabhupada was chanting. You say, wow, what could be better than that? Super receptive audience. They're right. So then Prabhupada started speaking. Dharma Chaitre, Guru Chaitre, Bhagavad Gita, about Balda Kurukshetra, Arjuna, identifying with the body, not doing his duty. Therefore, Krishna had to teach him that we're not the body. So, as Prabhupada was elaborating, Hayagriva describes, the devotees looked in the audience, everyone had left. Everyone had walked out. It was during the Vietnam War when young men in the USA and Australia were being drafted, military conscripts, to go to the jungles of Vietnam. So the students were very anti-war, anti-army, and so they just heard this message of Bhagavad Gita through their own context and just walked out. Bhagavad Gita's setting is provocative, so it requires us to do service by educating persons, teaching them how to understand Bhagavad Gita properly. Their misunderstandings are not a discouragement for us, it's an incentive for us to do more service. Take it in that way. Anything else? Yes.
So, Maharaj, you're talking about the subbing example and the karma bindu principle. So when we deal as professionals, we have to deal with the external world as well. So how do we check ourselves that, you know, we just take that tiny bit and not go deeper in?
Don't be seduced by the false promises of the external energy. You will get peace in this way. It's difficult to understand today, but with our intelligence, we must grapple with this point, that the more you seek material pleasure, the more material miseries come to your life. It's difficult, isn't it? There's just pleasure. It's a pure substance in of itself, and you just grab it, and it's yours. Or you work for it, you pay for it, or you inherit it. What's the problem? Prahlad Maharaj explains that material happiness is not pure. The sukha is mixed with the threefold miseries. We need a technical understanding. So many of you are so finely educated. We need a technical understanding of the realities of material happiness. It's mixed with the threefold miseries. Miseries of the body and mind, miseries caused by other persons, communities, societies, nations, and miseries caused by natural catastrophes. That's mixed in with sukha. You have to train yourself up to understand this. And then the bhakti lifestyle allows a gradual development of realization of these points. You're not going to get it all overnight. Each of the ashrams is a chance to become purified, to gradually develop in knowledge of what is the truth of material existence and what is the truth of Krishna's pleasure. All right, last question. Yes.
Maharaj, we see the preaching is an act of compassion to other living entities, but we recognize ourselves as sadhaka bhaktas, so we're doing sadhana. So where do we draw a line of improving our sadhana and going out preaching that we're not yet completely ripe to preach, but still we take up this act of preaching, but we're still also on the sadhana platform trying to develop?
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said the same thing that Krishna has said. What has Krishna said? Sarvadharma prachaja mamekam sharanam. Abandon all conceptions of what we think is dharma and do what I say. Take my plan. Lord Chaitanya says the same thing. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach the science of Krishna. On my order, you do that. So that's part of sadhana and raganuga. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.